This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Blacklist After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Blacklist After Show.
Have you seen the beard? Then this guy?
Uh-huh.
He's got this full beard.
No, he's got one. Right, well, I think we're doing a show right now.
We're doing a show right now. Hi. Welcome. Little Gordon Lightfoot. Right? Creeping down my back stairs.
Wow, guys.
Oh, yeah. We know the
welcome. Totally start a band.
We will.
You sound awesome.
Welcome to the Blacklist After Show, episode 13.
Woo!
The Cypress Agency. Right?
13?
I don't know.
Yeah, 13? I think so. No, 13.
13?
13.
13 Whoa. Says... Wonderful producer Marissa, who knows way more
Marissa
than
Marissa Serafini.
The Cypress Agency, thank you. Welcome for joining us again for our lovely show. We're here, as always. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm not joined to my right by Nando Velasquez, who is out on assignment, but he'll be back next week in studio and will never leave us again. Actually, he won't be back next week because we're not here next week.
No,
we
got some time off.
We got some time off.
We got some Olympics.
Yeah, so after the Olympics, we'll all be back here nailed to these chairs and we will not leave.
And I know we'll all be at home watching the Olympics religiously because the Winter Olympics is the most important thing that happens every 2 years.
Okay. I'm also joined by Julia Kearley. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Joe. Hi, everybody.
And I'm joined by Joe Sanfilippo, who loves the Olympics.
Loves them.
Clearly
I had no idea.
A deep hater of the Winter Olympics. Nice to see you guys, or be here with you.
Great. So, Blacklist, episode 13, that was the smooth sounds of the great Gordon Lightfoot.
Indeed.
Creeping down my back stairs. Is there a more perfect? It's almost like they wrote that scene for that song, because they talk about the satin dress, they talk about him sneaking in and out, they're talking about betrayal, they're talking about all this other stuff, and that all happened in that last wonderful, wonderful scene. That last scene is probably one of my favorite scenes, by the way, of the entire series, and we'll get to that in a second. But episode 13, the Cypress Agency, we learned a lot, man. I think we learned a lot. I feel good about what I've learned in this episode. I feel good about everything. I actually loved this episode. This was a great one for me. It really feels like the show's great. We all know the show's great. We love the show. But it really feels like, and this is kind of what I've been saying all seasons, patting myself on the back, it takes a while for a show, even a great show like The Blacklist, populated with great writing and great actors, it takes a show, sometimes a show to settle in and find its sort of like way. And The Blacklist has done that probably 3 or 4 episodes ago, but I really feel like this episode really just feels like we're onto something here. And this is where normally a cable show would end episode 13, because like shows like Breaking Bad and Mad Men only go 13 episodes. Mm-hmm. But we've got, fortunately, this is broadcast television, so we have a lot more. We have 22. So they're packing a lot of information here, and I'm really, really happy with this episode. I don't know. What do you think?
I really loved this episode. This is one of my favorites as well. We actually agree.
We agree.
I feel like something that I've had trouble with this show over the last 13 episodes is that there's been, to me, something of a disconnect. Like, it's been kind of two different shows. You have whoever the Blacklister is and the FBI going after them, and then you have Red and Lizzie and their personal lives and their personal vendettas or whatever we're dealing with there and trying to figure out get answers to those questions. So this time I felt like it sort of melded the two worlds, and I appreciated that. And so I was completely invested in the entire hour,
right,
rather than, okay, well, they can do this for a minute. Get back to what I want to know. Get sure. back to this. This, I was in it the entire time.
Sure, me too. Well, Filippo, you hated it.
Right? No, I loved it. That was great. It is interesting to me, though, that Red, you know, that he's such a connected person, connected to everybody in the underworld, that he's in a position to go, okay, well, she's adopting this kid. Let's make the next people on the list an object lesson for her in what's important in life.
Sure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also, we talk a lot about what is the purpose of the blacklist. Is it Red's revenge? Is it this or another? But it almost seems like, you know, yeah, it's Red like, Lizzie needs a life
Let's
lesson about
see.
Family and adoptions. I know.
We'll take down the adoption agency.
You know, like, she'll learn some lessons there. That's what it does seem a little bit
doesn't
like
it?
That, doesn't
yeah.
it? You know? And then every now and then you get some personal vendetta. Every now and then you get, a revenge thing for Red. But it's clear the blacklist, this is maybe why it's there's no linear number. It's not like we're going to start with number one and work our way down, or start with number 100 and work our way up. It's kind of like all over the place. It feels like Red's like, you know, thumbing through the blacklist like, yeah, this looks good. Let's try these guys. I know that's what it feels like. But I don't know. Do you agree with that, Julia, or no? I think me and Joe are just talking a bunch of shit.
I don't know. I could go either way. I really don't. All right.
I don't care.
All right. I have no clue why they're numbered the way they're numbered. And
sure.
I look forward to finding that out one day.
All right.
But I have no opinion on it as
but
of yet.
Joe and I just told Sorry. You. Joe and I just solved it.
Oh, thanks.
Done. Done and done.
All right, so let's get into the Cyrus Agency is this episode.
Cyprus.
Wait, no, I have Cyrus here and Cyprus there, so it's Cyprus. I'm sorry. I miswrote it.
Cyprus, like the place in Greece.
The Cyprus Agency. Not one person, but an entire agency. Is a blacklister. I thought this was a good little side story. It played out very much in a procedural way. This is one of our, like, very true, we talk about how the show is kind of does this procedural thing, and then it does the Red storyline thing. You have the other, you know, B storyline with Tom and Lizzie, whatever's going on. But this, this storyline, this B story or A story, whatever you want to call it, felt very much like a procedural. We found the bad guys. We got into the mystery. We got our clues. We got our payoff at the end. It played out like an episode of Law and Order, actually. And I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think that at its face, when I first found out about, like, oh, the adoption agency, and they're genetically getting the right kids, and I thought, like, it sounded a bit hokey and a little, like, I don't know. But once we got the final reveal, and we got to that final shot of all those women, like, in that clinic, that was really disturbing. And
22.
Then, of course, 22 women, like, in on this thing, like, and then the final double secret reveal of the guy being like, and by the way, they're all mine. Scoreboard. And I was like, whoa.
This was a fun, dark, and twisty one.
Yeah, I got really sort of disturbed. I'm like, oh, because that guy's not, he's not right in the head.
He ain't right. And so you got 27 kids out there, at least, that are being raised that have wackadoo genetics in there somewhere.
Right. And the irony, the supreme irony is these parents were wanting the perfection. They want the perfect kid, and they want this, that, and the other. And they're ordering them up. He's like, well, I'm perfect. Start with me. And then we'll just find the rest of these ladies here.
But right.
The whole thing was really scary.
It was upsetting, actually, a little bit. As a woman, at least. The thought of being kidnapped and put into an induced coma for years.
Years.
Just bearing children.
Yeah.
Just popping them out.
You're healthy.
Is really a very upsetting and disturbing thought.
Yeah.
Depressing and awful. Does this stuff happen?
I don't know. Well, I did. I gotta say, you know, when I saw the doctor, the fertility doctor, the brother, the black guy, I couldn't help but think of Dr. Conrad, what's his name? Michael Jackson's doctor. Like,
really?
Just in my head, I'm like, these sleep-induced comas, this weird doctor who's, you know, who has access to all these crazy drugs that'll keep you out and functioning
for years,
and it's like, it was just weird. I'm like, I just couldn't help think of Michael Jackson. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, the whole thing was very, very creepy and very, I don't know, very disturbing. So we found out, we got the first guy who they got, who was so disturbed by the whole thing that he got himself hit by a bus. My man.
No, that was deep. I think it was a little overblown.
You think so?
I don't know, man.
A little Final Destination for you?
Right? You know, a little... Oh, you know, the way they did in the previews was a little misleading. Because
yes,
in the previews,
exactly. I was gonna say that.
You got the vibe like, screw it, I'm jumping in front of a bus rather than face the rest of the Cypress agency.
Yes.
And he says in the previews, tell my family I'm sorry.
Right. Right, which,
I love them.
But that was a red herring. That was a that was a little ADR they added in later.
You know, that's interesting. I don't like when they do that, and that's rare when they do that, when, you know, they'll do an episode one way, either do the episode one way and then they'll recut it and the final episode you see is different. So the promos are different. That happens a lot. Or, you know, the promo department's like, forget it.
We can
screw
this
it.
Thing. Wouldn't it Let's, be cool if
this is good? You know, NBC promo department, like, making it happen. So either way, I was very excited to see that scene, and it didn't kind of play out the way one.
No, it was a different scene. It was a different ending completely.
Yeah. But still cool. I mean, you know, get hit by a bus.
Well, that's always fun.
Yeah, yeah, but choosing to get hit by a bus is much different than accidentally getting hit by a bus. Yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I
so went through that, but so that was a nice, you know, like I said, it was a good story. Who else in the room thought for sure 100% that one of those babies were going to be the Tom and Lizzie baby? I thought for sure that one of those babies at the Cypress agency was going to be one of the ones that Tom and Lizzie.
Oh, I'm too dumb to have even come up with that.
Oh,
no, because
I thought for sure. I'm like, and she's going to go to the clinic and see the ultrasound and be like,
no, because they know who their baby mama is.
Do they?
Yeah, it's
that's
Jen.
True. That's right. You're right. Yeah, no, we met her. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. I forgot about that. I thought there was going to be something. Okay.
It's not that I'm so dumb. I am just that smart.
No,
maybe that's the deal.
This side of
the table is where the cool, bright kids hang out.
You're right. This side of the table is
I was looking for a connection. It would have been so beautiful had there been a connection.
Right.
But we know Jen. We know who she is.
Yeah.
They know who she is.
You're right. You're absolutely right. So that's that's why I'm waiting for, like, oh, no, she's going to find, you know, but no. But I think the lesson was learned, obviously. Which we'll get to this in a second. Just, I know you want to talk a little Tom and Lizzie, but it's kind of like, what does this mean for Tom and Lizzie? And if Tom is this spy guy who's hanging out, then, you know, they're broken up, and now he's going to go play with this other girl, and so that connection to Lizzie is now maybe not as close as it once was.
I got the vibe. It was kind of like his last. Are we talking about it now? Are we good to go?
Oh, why not?
I don't know why not. Let's talk about
it. The Cypress agency.
So, I kind of feel like that was Tom's kind of like his last. If we are to believe Tom is who he says he is, mm-hmm. I think that was Tom's last straw. I think that was like, you know, this is our, we're going to do this thing together. Because, you know, some couples are that way. You know, you have to be constantly building. And if you're constantly building, the relationship is great. But if you stop building, it all falls apart.
Right.
And I think that Tom kind of felt like that was his last chance to do that. And last chance to keep building, to keep putting something together with her that was theirs,
right,
that wasn't shared with everybody else, and I think her walking away from that, I think that's the end of the line for Tom and Lizzie.
Yeah, does that come from your marriage and relationship blog, Dr.
What's
Dr.
That?
Flippo?
Listen, like, I know lots and lots of stuff.
That was awesome.
If you guys have any personal questions, if you need some time alone with me, I only charge $250 an hour. Accredited is a very very broad term.
No, I agree. Well, the thing, though, no, I guess the point that I'm making is that's all well and good, but Tom is not who he says he is. Tom is not, you know, sweet Tom Keen. Tom is whatever he is. He's some other plant or a spy or something else is going on there. So we're led to believe this whole time, or at least I was led to believe, that he's there keeping an eye on Lizzie or doing something to or with Lizzie. And now he seems to be like, all right, well, screw it. I'm off with this other chick. So does that get him off the hook? Or do we think that, because Red is very, very much pushing Tom and not who he thinks
spy,
he is.
Though, if he's a plant, he's very, I find him to be extremely emotionally invested in this relationship and this family. That seems a bit much for someone who's hired to be there.
He's a good actor, man. You got to go deep cover. Deep cover.
Deep cover means sweaters and glasses.
And then also, if he's being paid
the Americans
to be there,
deep
if
cover.
That's his job, why is he just like, all right, fine, I'm just going to go bang this girl instead? Like, that's not his job.
That's true.
If he's there to do a job, he's failing miserably.
Well, he's going to do a job, all right.
Now, that's a really good point, though. I mean, like, if you're a spy, you really ought not to be susceptible to somebody coming along to drag you away, because you ought to be, you're playing a game anyway. So you ought to be in a position to be more objective, to look at it from a more removed space. And if a girl comes along to kind of drag you away this way, you're playing a game anyway. So you're not going
to
go,
especially if they're a six, like you say they are.
I said a six to seven. Six to seven.
I thought she was pretty hot. Like, my standards are a little different. I thought she was
Listen, I'm gonna call it like I think it is. It's a 6 to 7. And if it was a 12, yes. If a 12 walks in and goes, "Hey, let's hang out," I go, I can't. Right. Number one, I can't talk to her. Number two, I'm suspicious. Okay. Why would a 12 come talk to me? But a 6, 7, she might talk to me.
I think that, Tom Hanks, whether he's a super spy or not, he's a man, and this woman is attractive and showing him something. So I think that he's just
some interest. He can't help it because he's a man.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna stamp
is that,
that
what's
one.
Happening
no, I'm
right
gonna
now?
Stamp that one. Yes.
Okay.
No, really, you need to pay attention to your husbands and your boyfriends. We need attention. We are not, we're flowers. We're pretty flowers. Need to be watered.
All I'm asking
with love
is,
and affection.
Before we get, because we're burying the lead, we haven't talked about the guacamole situation.
Uh-oh!
But before I, get that, is Tom, I ask this question every week, is Tom a spy or not? Go, Julia.
No, okay. I mean, no. Okay. If he is, he's a really bad one.
All right. So when that reveal happens, when he's like, "I was a spy all along," you're going to be like, "This show sucks." Or are you going to be like,
"Oh yeah, I'm going to flip the table."
You're like, "Oh, okay.
This is a big table. It's going to take
a lot of headphones down. I'm going to flip the table and out the door.
Water and Go Girl everywhere.
Mm. Go Girl everywhere.
That's a free commercial for Go Girl right there.
Yes.
Go Girl.
Julia's drink of choice.
Get the shakes.
Joe, what do you think?
I have gone back and forth on Tom. I have vacillated on Tom.
Yes.
Right now, I'm kind of not a spy Tom right now. That's kind of where I'm at.
All right.
Because I don't if I were a spy, I don't think I'd fall for a honeypot. That doesn't even make any sense to me.
Okay.
If you're a spy, you should be able to sniff out another
spy. That's what
spy.
I'm saying. You'd be like, "No, this doesn't smell right. Get out."
You know, everything that I see and
I would make a terrible spy, by the way, because, I'm like, "Honeypot, let's go.
Let's go.
Honeypot?
What is it?
I'm ready to freaking poo, man.
Hey.
Let's go."
I don't know. She looks nice to me. I got some spying to do, but
I'm sure it's going to be like egg on my face. Right. That phrase, I don't know why. Egg on my face. But everything I'm seeing in regards to Tom tells me he's not a spy. Everything except for Red.
Sure. Which is why I say he's a spy, because I'm on Team Red. I think that Red has never, very, very, very rarely did a red herring. He doesn't throw this out there, but he's very much like, he's pretty straightforward. He's almost always right, and he's been very much since, episode one or two, like, Tom is not who he thinks says he is. Now, he didn't say Tom's a super spy, he's going to kill you, but he does say Tom is not who he says he is. So maybe that's there, but I'm just with Red on that. Like, I don't know why that would be anything different from, I doubt we get to the season finale and Red's like, "Yeah, I was wrong about the guy."
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's what he says he is, but I don't think that he's a super spy out to get her. Like, I don't know. It's very frustrating.
Right. Okay, well, we'll table that. We've spent far too much time on that, because we have to discuss Agent Malik, the super guacamole, who's not such a guacamole.
She's not. She's not as much of a sneaky bitch as I thought she was.
Yeah, she was not.
Sorry,
but she is
Malik.
A tough little Punjabi.
she is.
I'm sorry, tough little Punjab. As Mr. Teddy Brindley said, who I love, by the way. I'll get to that in a second. Between Mr. Kaplan and Teddy Brimley, Red's crew his mysterious crew is great. Teddy Brimley had like two lines, and he was my favorite character of all time.
He's the most memorable.
Like with the oxygen mask and the thing, and like, who knows? Like, I love the mystery of like, who knows what he does? Who knows what he did in there? Who knows if he tortured, if he did administered some drugs, if he smacked her around? Who knows? But he comes out wheeling a thing, and he's like, "She's clearer than a duck fart. I'm Brimley. I'm out of here." Like, and Red's like, "Thank you, Mr. Brimley." And I'm like, "Whoa, what did he do?" She's a tough little Punjab.
That was rough.
She's telling the truth.
Yeah.
That was rough. And so when he goes in there and he's like, now that you've been vetted, she's like, "I talked already. I need you to talk. I've already talked." And she looked exhausted.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like, what happened in that room? What did Mr. Brindley do with that oxygen tank? He's like, he's capable of doing anything rough. It's like a cab driver.
Well, apparently he's got some unknown skills.
Ugh. anyway, that, I love the idea of that. I'm a big fan of like, yes, thank you. Was that Connery or was that Liam Neeson?
No, it was supposed to be
Liam. I didn't say it was any good.
Yeah, it was Liam Neeson. That's okay. So, but I love these characters that like have this, you know, you just imagine the backstory.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Kaplan's one of them. This person's one of them. My man, the druggy kid at the party, which I'll talk about in a second. Russell.
Loved him.
Loved him too. But, so let's talk about this. So, Agent Malik was the mole and they very much teased it like, we found her. And then he was going to put a bullet in her head. And we know that from the previews that she said, don't do that. We see at the beginning, old Teddy interrogated her or vetted her, if you will, and she came back exhausted, and Red was like, tell me what you know. And in pretty much like 30 seconds, she's like, yeah, well, here's the thing. I'm not the mole. Someone else hired me. They killed my friends too. I'll help you. What do you want? And he's like, all right. It felt a little anticlimactic to me.
A little bit. She was just doing her job,
right.
It turns out.
Right. That felt like very much like a red herring. I felt very manipulated by John Blomkamp.
We have a little bit of an issue with the promo department of NBC. That's apparently what we've learned here today.
Right? Are you blaming the promo department?
I don't know. We were kind of rewriting some scenes.
Right. What did you think of that whole thing, Joe? Were you disappointed that she was not the mole? Did you know she wasn't the mole? Did you feel like there was more back there?
No,
like,
I'm actually really glad that she wasn't the mole. I love the way they went with this because it. I love when you kind of think. You know, you said something to me years ago when you were staying at Wynn. Mm-hmm. You said that you got comped for some super sweets at the very top, and then from the super sweets at the very top,
this podcast is
it's not. You said from the top you could see the villas on the backside, but you couldn't see them from any other rooms.
Right.
And so you can always see that there's one more level to go. And
yes.
I think that's what I like about this right now is that you go, okay, Malik, she's the CIA, that she's working with the FBI, she's the plant that's really high placed.
Okay.
And then you go, nah. The high place plant is 8 levels up.
Right.
And here's the high place plant.
Nah, I see what you're saying.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I got you.
So
my point there is that at Vegas, no matter what level you on, there's always 8 more levels.
That's
so,
right.
So if I'm in a suite, I look down, there's a villa down there. Like, who's in that villa?
Right. Yeah. How come I can't get in there?
And I'll never get in there because it's 8 levels up than where I am. Got it.
So that's what I'm saying. So I like that instead of having Malik, who is, I mean, you know, she's obviously got it going on, but she's not super high level. We've gone all the way up to almost cabinet level.
Sure.
And then we're learning that Fitch has some machinations going on at that level, and so does Red, and so this is all way above Cooper,
right.
and I love that. I love that we've gone that high.
Well, I think to a certain degree, Red has to know that Malik is. I mean, she, you know, I think that at the level that this is operating at, Malik could really only be a pawn. I mean, even a CIA. So I think that he had to know to a certain degree. I'm going to find out who you're working for, or who's pulling your strings. Because,
well, I feel like it should have been kind of an obvious guess at that point that it was going to be our girl Diane, because she's the one who brought Malik in to this task force in the first place, out of the blue. So she is her pawn, essentially. She's there to do her bidding, whether she knows it or not.
Right. That's very, very true. And I think that I did like that we finally also, and they're very, there's a lot of things that they're doing here that they've been able to do over the last 13 episodes, is all these questions we had about what's she doing there, now we sort of see it all make sense why she's there, and because before it's like she's a CIA agent, oh, she's there to be a mole, but now we see she's kind of put there and stayed there, and now she's invested because she's lost people too. You know, they're fleshing out her character. We know about her daughter, and we know,
new.
That seems to be a key. They mentioned like
twice
at least.
At the end, when Harold's like,
I hope your daughter feels better.
Yeah.
But, so I feel like we're getting some more information about Agent Malik, because, you know, before I had nothing other than she was a short, attractive CIA agent. You know, that's all I had. But, so I like that. The other thing I noticed about this situation, Once Red sort of let her go, actually I thought he was going to kill her there. I did for a moment there when he met her, when she gave Red the information that she procured by getting Harold's card and gave Red the flash drive, and he's like, thank you. For one second I thought he was going to pull out a gun and just, you know, because he's like Mr. No Loose Ends. But he's like, thank you for this information.
Yeah, but that's just someone else on his side who is deep
right.
in it.
That's
somebody.
No, it makes sense that he let her go. But I'm saying the way Red's been rolling lately.
Sure.
Like, I thought, wow, he might just cap her right here, but he didn't. But anyway, my point is that we've learned here now. I like how Red now, but now that he has Malik, he's got something on the whole task force, right? Like, there's not every single person in that task force he's had an intimate conversation with, and to the degree of like, I got you. I mean, obviously Lizzie, yes, right. Harold, he pulled Harold aside and like, remember, you know, whatever.
Whatever that was.
Beirut or whatever that was. Yeah. He pulled in my guy, the poor the analyst.
Arum.
Yeah, pulled Arum in and then let him go.
He had some key hours with Wrestler and
key hours with Wrestler in the box and let him know that I know all about you, Wrestler, and I got you. And now Malik. So the whole task force separately, Red has them all.
Oh.
It's kind of cool the way they did
that. Ooh.
Did you know?
Oh, Joe Braswell, you're so smart.
Joe Braswell, ladies and gentlemen.
Sometimes I watch stuff.
Look at that.
And pay attention.
Very true. That's
so
that's really
I think that's really
interesting
and really, really, so we'll see that. We'll see how Red can exercise that power because now, you know, they brought him in. They're all like separately mad at him or separately afraid of him. But, you know, as Harold said, you know, that weird speech he gave in that little conversation he had with Malik when he was like, you know, I think Red is a suicidal blah, 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 blah. But because of him, we solved all these cases. And that was cool, even as a viewer, to get that acknowledgement from Harold as opposed to him just being, because, you know, we asked this before, like, he's so mad about everyone hates Red and everyone, like, dude, Red is solving your shit. Like, everyone relax. And so it was kind of good to have that acknowledgement
from him. Yeah, I agree. It showed this episode that that Harold is really in the dark about some stuff.
Yeah.
He has no idea what's going on in his own task force.
He doesn't.
I mean, he believes that there was no mole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said, Intel said, nah, it's all taken care of. That Newton Phillips acted alone. He goes, okay.
Right.
And even when Malik comes to him and says, you know, there's more to this, he goes,
uh-uh. What's your evidence?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, now we know why she was cleared so quickly. Remember, it's like, well, Malik, you're clear
mm-hmm.
because
right came from on high.
Came from on high. That all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's all coming together. So now we know. I mean, so I feel like you know I complain a lot about there's nothing we don't know anything. We're not learning anything. But I feel like we've learned a lot and learning a lot. Continue to learn a lot. I want to talk about a little bit about this last scene with Diane and Red. But before I do that, I want to thank you guys for joining us on iTunes. Thank you for downloading us. You consistently make us top five, top three most downloaded show in AfterBuzz. We totally appreciate you following us, our crew, from show to show to show, or even just on this show. And I'm jumping a gun on this, but I want to acknowledge some of our fans because we don't do the tickety tickety lately, and Nando's not here. But I do want to say hi to Ashley. I'm gonna butcher every name, but here we go. Ashley, Ashley Kearney, thank you very much. Freddie Lakes Jr., Jill S., the Tickle T Lady, Paramore 57, who I think Joe is that no Paramore 57 is great. Game Jax, thank you very much. Christy. Stracklin, Sasu, 1234567 89 text, MDS 1978. We will address your thing, MDS 1978, because you're right. We didn't get into some stuff last week, which we'll talk about, and Joe wants to talk to you too. Abby Wax, 480, Dark Phoenix 2. Thank you all very much, and all of the rest of you who.
That's some good ones.
Oh, and of course, Complena Sarah. I mean, she's a staple. I forget her.
We have some good Twitter ones, too. We have Langley, MTA of
the
Day.
Oh, Langley, MTA of the Day. My man, MTA of the Day.
Yeah,
we got some
great ones, Shelly.
And Langley, of course, Shelly, and all of them. So thank you all for listening and downloading and continue to do so and rating us on iTunes. And we love it. We love you guys. And watching us, if you're watching us, hello. All right. So, well, let's get into this right now, Joe. I mean, let's talk about, because, I mean, we don't, you know, let's talk to the people. Let's talk to the people out here.
Well, no,
MDS 1978 says, Joe Flippo's an asshole.
It was very strongly worded.
Did he say that?
No, he said, who cares about whether Liz and Tom should have a baby? Of all the things to talk about, this is the last thing I care about. And it's so annoying that I kept bringing it up. Which is the whole reason I brought it up, because I felt like the show was losing its mind that we're talking about adopting a baby and bringing a kid in, and all of it, and that would be like the secondary, tertiary, maybe the fourth or fifth storyline, and that doesn't matter. And my point of view was it does matter. And obviously the show agrees because this whole episode was about the adoption, which clearly at this point is not going to happen. So I understand MBS 1978 that there are bigger fish to fry, and I think ultimately that's the whole point, is that if Lizzie's in a position, as Cooper said, to solve 22 missing persons cases with one, with 22 missing persons files with one case, she's in a position to do a lot of good for a lot of people, and you can't be so distracted as the guy from the Cypress Agency's adoptive parents for a year and a half were. So and they obviously can be very destructive. And very terrible for the kid. So anyhow, Hal. So I think that's all there is about that.
Okay, you feel good about that?
I feel friggin' vindicated. Yeah.
All right. Also, MDS 1978. You're right about,
and that is, yeah. He's absolutely right about that. Well, no, or she, whoever that is.
Well, yeah, or he or she. But you're right about our lack of really getting into the whole Lucy / Jolene situation, because she's a big deal. I mean, obviously, she's the one in the database. She's the one in the obituary from earlier, which we didn't mention out. And she's the one who's now inserted herself into the life of Tom and Lizzie, literally. And she's also, she has a file. Mm-hmm. So she's connected to Red. And who's she working for? And what is her agenda? And Red's, you know, really, really trying to find her. And all these questions about, you know, Red's family and the kid and who's the daughter and the little girl in the picture and all this other stuff. I mean, you know, maybe it's Lucy or Jolene. You know, maybe that's part of it. Or maybe, I don't know. But something is going on there that we didn't talk about. But we don't know the answer to it.
No, I thought we touched on it last week. I guess we didn't. No, she's going to become an extremely important character to, I think, all the people we've grown to love on this show, being right. Lizzie, Tom, Red, because Red's definitely invested in her. He's very interested in her, and I cannot wait to find out why. And I don't know. She has a draw for Tom.
Well, I mean, you know, and the big picture as a Sasu 1234567 text 1X. I'm sorry. As they brought up as well, there's a big picture. Then this whole show is obviously clear about the big picture, and it's all about being able to zoom out. And as we said a million times, we need the homeland. We need the big board. We need a homeland big board just to be able to operate the show because, you know, like I said, we get focused on these episodes on a micro level, on the procedural side, and we get invested in these characters and get to know these characters. But there is an overarching bigger picture here, which is what the hell did Red Reddington come out of the shadows to do? He didn't come just to help people. He didn't come, you know, just to be a nice guy. He came out of the shadows to do something. It wasn't so he can expose the blacklist. He's here for a reason. He puts himself at great risk by exposing himself and turning himself in. And that's the central mystery to the show, which we have yet to solve. And I wonder, I don't know if we'll get to the bottom of that by the end of the season, or if that's something they'll carry on from season to season.
Yeah.
I think we'll get like more and more clues and issues to it. I mean, clues to it. But anyway, so that's that. Yeah. Big picture, big board. Thanks for the comments, everyone. Keep commenting. Call us out. Agree with us. Whatever you love to do. I would love right now to talk about that last scene. And when Spader, the Gordon Lightfoot scene, where Spader is in the house and is waiting for Diane. And I thought that was, again, this one of my favorite scenes for a lot of reasons. Number one, I thought the acting on both of them was superb.
Yeah.
I thought that I was genuinely surprised and shocked when he pulled the trigger, you know, like it made me jump. I did not expect him to shoot her in like that quickly, mid-sentence. I love how she comes in with all of her swag and bravado, and he's like, sit your ass down.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I did love, he shot her. I was, like, shocked. And then they have the exchange, the conversation, and she's like, Red, I know the truth. I know the truth about your family, about your kids. Wouldn't you like to know the truth? And that pause when he's like, I would like to know the truth. But then Spader gives this, like,
but if you know
10-second
spot.
Yeah. But it's a 10-second pause. I remember going, like, say it. What are you going to say? I found myself like, oh my God, I'm hanging on this man's every word.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sitting here like watching a broadcast television show like on NBC, and I'm hanging on his word like I'm watching the Oscars or something. So, or an Oscar nominated performance. Spader's that good. But then when he said, if you know, someone else knows, and then he empties the gun on her.
Sure does.
That was I did not see any of that shit coming. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know if he felt like. Do you think he went in knowing he was going to kill her?
Yes, he's prepared to.
Yeah,
he's prepared. He was prepared to kill Malik. When Red shows up in the hat and when you turn on your light and Red's in the chair holding a gun,
shit's on.
Nothing good's gonna happen. He's prepared. If the gun's out, he's prepared to do something bad.
If you don't convince him pretty quickly,
right,
something to offer him right off the bat, you're done.
Sometimes he'll disassemble and reassemble a gun. Sometimes he'll give you a little time. But usually he's just ready for action. You know.
All right, so let me ask you this. Because he was saying to Mr.
Kaplan.
Mr. Kaplan. It got a little messier than I thought it would. Isn't that what he said?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I maybe did he get emotional? Do you think, or do you think?
Oh, that's a good point.
Did he intend to kill her?
It's a good catch.
Or did he just not? I mean, maybe the intention was, you know, maybe I'll kill her different, but he wound up shooting her.
No, I think he was going to shoot her. And it was loud and messy.
By the way, I think that 100% he was going to shoot her. I don't think there was a moment of him even thinking he wasn't, because if you go back to, I think it was last episode or the episode before, where he systematically went through every single person attached to that breach, and he didn't give a shit. He killed them all.
Right.
So why, if he killed the paramedic in the back of the ambulance, why wouldn't he kill?
Well, he didn't kill the banker though. He let the banker go.
Kill the banker. Well, he can still use the banker.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So obviously, he didn't feel he had any use for Diane.
Right.
But you know, Diane said we came into the post office to make a point. Maybe this was him making a point.
Right. Well, again, now this is what's interesting to me, and I think this is where eventually we're going to land. I hope, anyway. If it'd be exciting to me if we did, because it's the idea conceptually that people are in government, but that's not what they're committed to. There's that the idea of that corporate government combination, which I think is what the show was starting with in the beginning, and I hope it gets back to is this idea that people go through a revolving door at the government, like Fitch and Diane. They hold government positions, they hold government titles, they hold access to government assets, and so they can use government apparatus to achieve their goals, but they're really corporate people. They're business people. And you know, obviously the government's not going to pay you the amount of money you need to have the lifestyle these people want. So it's this, to me anyway, it's this exciting combination of corporate and governance together that it seems like the show is going after, with Fitch and Red having an operating agreement, like you can leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. And obviously Fitch is high placed in government, but at the same time high placed with the criminals that are being paid off, and I'm assuming high placed corporate wise. So I'm really interested to see where all this kind of comes out, if they can draw that picture. But when Diane says we, she's not talking about the people she's in charge of in government. She's talking about this outside group.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Absolutely.
So many reveals, as you said, like so many reveals about like what, you know, what the nature of, you know, Fitch and Red's relationship. Like he does his thing, I do mine. Like we had an agreement. Which is, to me, there's so much information in that one thing. Like, oh, okay, well, what is that agreement and what is his thing exactly? what is his other thing? And then the reveal about the family, don't you want to know about your family? And he's like, more than anything, I really did want to know. And it's like, this is, it leads us to believe that there is some central importance. The most poignant moments we see with Red is when they're related to him thinking about his family or thinking about another time or thinking about a better time. You know, he kind of goes off into that little trance and he starts, you know, waxing, you know, nostalgic about whatever it is. And that was one of those times, in that brief moment, like in that pause, he's like, more than anything. But if you know, someone else know. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I do agree with you, Joe. I think that, you know, I didn't think about that. It's a good catch. I think it did get messier than he thought. I think there was some emotion there. I mean, Red is, he, you know, just one to the head, you know, but he
or like, you could have poisoned her. I mean, and then there's no mess at all.
He went Tony Montana on her. Like, he just, you know, he just, you know, blah, blah, blah. That wasn't necessary. I was like, that may have been a little bit unnecessary, Red.
Yeah, he told Kaplan, you know, I didn't intend to get this messy, you know, I mean. And that to me was very, you know, especially with the white satin and there's a bunch of blood splurring out of the plate. That was bloody. It got bloody.
Yeah.
But I think, I think he got a little emotional at some point in there. To whatever degree Red is capable of getting emotional. He doesn't really seem to have very tight control.
I see those wheels turning in
there. Can you guys answer something for me? Maybe I missed something here. She says, Diane says in that last scene that that they came in not only to prove a point, but to protect him.
Yeah.
But what was the point then of this whole thing? Because the final outcome of that entire operation was him getting his ass kicked by Enzo Garrick and then sitting down with Fitch.
Right.
So what was the point? Well, what am I missing?
I think that we're led to believe that. Well, okay, I don't believe her when she says we're there to protect you. I think that she was just trying to get out of being shot. Because there was like, I'm going to call the police, sit your ass down. She sits down. He's like, look, we're trying to protect you, whatever it is. And I think that that was, I think she was just sort of like trying to save her life. I think that, because Alan Alda made it very clear that like, we wanted you to know that we can get to you, you know? So
all that, killing all those people, all the money that was spent on this, everything was just a, that was the point, was to prove to Red that we can get you at any time.
These guys
but he said, I can get you when you're walking in the park.
Yeah. But still, it's like the whole thing
I
is.
Don't know. It's a lot of hoopla.
It's a lot of hoopla. But these are the guys you're dealing with. Like, they'll say, I don't care what FBI black site you're in. I don't care how protected you think you are. I don't care if you run to the FBI and start talking about God knows what.
Well, that's it.
I don't care if you're a deep underground or deep in the middle of the Bering Sea on some tanker in a clear box that Joe Flippo thinks doesn't exist.
We will
come and find you. That's
ultimately the point, right? If they're nervous, because they don't understand Red's motivation, right? So I'm guessing that they have no idea who Lizzie Keen is or that Lizzie Keen matters. So if Red's motivation is suspect to them and they're doing business, then they wanted to let Red know, like, if your deal is you think the FBI can protect you, obviously, no.
Right.
But then you take it a step further. And then you've got this combination to me that's interesting is the idea of Fitch and Diane and who's above Fitch and Diane. And we were talking about people willing to kill all these other people to make a point to one other guy. So they're playing on a different level.
Right.
And it's so, it is disconcerting when you're not one of those people to consider that you might end up being a pawn in somebody's game.
Yeah.
And like the people that we do know, personally, the cops and the firefighters and the people that we are actually interacting with all the time, they're not important to these people.
Well, not only that, it just really makes it very clear how insignificant and inconsequential the FBI task force is in this whole thing. It's like, Red's just like, oh, these guys. He even made mention to that with Lizzie. He's like, they teach you how to think.
Linear thinking.
He's just so bored with the whole thing. Yeah. Like, Harold and, this wrestler. Listen, up here, we do things this way. Up here, we know how to do things. But, you get that sense that, like, this is whole other hierarchy of whatever is going on, super spydom, corporate espionage, international, blah, 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 that is, that's cool, where the blacklisters live. So I don't know. That's some rarefied real estate. Before we move on to, because I do want to do like a quick, because we're here at, this is of the official, well, it's kind of the official halfway point. No, it's not of the season. No, is it? Because we're 13 now.
22.
So I guess 11 would be. But this is the break. We had one break before the holiday. We had this break for the Olympics, and we're coming back in February. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point, they'll probably just run it out to the end, maybe. But so I want to talk about sort of what we've seen so far. But I got to mention, I want to talk about our boy, the party. I thought that was...
Russell. That's a great character.
And I loved everything about that. I love Red walking into that party.
Telling her, be polite. This is the nicest narcotics dealer this side of Cleveland.
Yes. And it's this house party. And
huge house party.
Girls are in their bikinis. And Red has this like shit-eating grin on his face.
In the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah.
It's like Tuesday afternoon. And we're all getting crazy.
That's what I'm doing. And I love the look. It was very, Not to go back, but it's very, very Steph of Pretty in Pink. When he walked in that room, he's like, party.
Steph.
He's like, I don't remember this. No. Like, that guy came out, he took off his hat. This is a big grin.
You had that Steph grin. It was awesome.
The Steph grin.
He's looking up. Like,
was so Pretty in Pink. That's a Sam like Spader.
Oh, my God.
even a little bit less than zero, too. Like,
less than zero. Like, Spader walking into a party is like, one of the coolest things ever.
Oh, yeah.
And that was cool. And then I just thought, like, this guy is, at least 25 years older than anybody in the building.
Minimum.
I mean, you know, what's like, you know, Red's got to be 50 or right? whatever it is, you know.
Yeah. I did mescaline before your mom thought about you.
But it was very cool. And I thought, like, how old, obviously old and out of place he was in his hat and his suit, how comfortable he felt. Like, oh, yeah, it's one of these things. He just kind of checked out the girl in the bikini, and there she is. Walked around, and Lizzie's like, this is gross. And I just thought that was a very cool scene. And then we got to what's his name? I can't remember his name. The drug dealer guy?
Russell.
Red, what's up, fool?
Yeah.
Right?
That's my favorite line. What's up, fool? Red's like, what's up? The hug. I'm like, really?
I love that.
What's up, fool? I just love that.
Like, on every level.
I love the idea of Red. I mean, Red, for one minute he's in with international spies at a baccarat table in Saint-Tropez. The next minute he's getting a what's
right.
up fool from a kid in like suburban
Georgetown.
And
right?
he ingratiates yeah. himself into all these situations.
It's awesome.
It really shows this episode really showed the spectrum of Red's people, his go-to right. people, and the people he's dealing with, from Russell to what was his name, the guy who interrogated Malik.
Oh yeah, my favorite guy, Teddy Brimley.
Yeah, I mean, it really shows like the two sides of the spectrum and everything in between, and how comfortable he is. Is in every situation. We saw him in Cuba hanging out. Everything. He's cool. He can hang.
And not only
he's Steph.
Do we know he's cool because he's Steph and he's James Spader and he exudes that when he remember what situations he's into, but he'll tell you because that motherfucker has an anecdote for everything.
Everything.
Last time I huffed mescaline.
Yeah, exactly.
Those Navajo tacos.
And I love, yeah, exactly. And I love, even Lindsay was like, how long ago was that? It's like, yeah, two years ago. Yesterday. Thursday.
Right. Do you really care if I'm doing illegal narcotics of all the stuff we've done together?
Like, come on. Yeah. He's like, oh, I'd love to. I don't know, he gives that little sniff. He's like, yeah, I'd love to, but I got some work to do.
And I like that Lizzie's witnessing all this. She's becoming a little, he's I don't know, she's a little endeared towards him now, right. I feel like. Every episode, just a little bit more.
That's a really cool, one of the really many cool things this show does is by you get more information about Red by these people he associates with, whether it's Mr. Brindley or Mr. Kaplan Daniel.
Russell,
the drug dealer. I love it. Yeah, I love it. He was, that was so funny. It's almost like,
fun scene.
Even as goofy as that scene was, he's like, oh my God, only 8 people use it. 7 of them are sleep doctors and 1's a fertility dude. And they're all like, thanks, Russell.
Thanks, Russell. I've said it before. I love television. I love that in television,
so TV.
That's how it's done. Oh, really? Is that quick? Get done. Yeah, all right, we got to go to his office.
Yeah, I really love that scene. I love everything about it. I don't know.
One little thing I do have to mention in this episode, just to keep the tally straight, we did have another neck stabbing.
Oh, we did?
We sure did.
Gosh.
We need to get the final tally by the end of the season. The Rachel girl, she got stabbed in the neck and sedated in the van.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And let this be a lesson out there to ladies.
Yeah, really.
The rule is, if there is a big van, this is serious.
No, that's totally serious.
If there is a van parked next to your car.
I got two daughters. You got 3 daughters.
I'm serious. This is true. This is something that
ladies
know. If there is a big, ominous van parked directly next to you and you have to get in your car, you go in on the passenger side.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Hello. Hello.
Van, don't go in at all.
There's never a good look when a van.
No.
Never a good look.
And we've seen so many.
Bessler was kind of a shitty FBI agent in this episode.
Well, he wasn't such a badass.
He didn't even think like, oh, wait, there's a car. Oh, wait, there's a big ominous van right next to it. It didn't dawn
on
him.
It's the BOV. It's the BOV.
And we mention all the time. We do this show. We do Hannibal. We do The Following. We do Bates Motel. One constant in all these shows is the big effing creepy van.
Yes.
When you see the van roll up, ladies.
Trust it.
Get out of there.
That's it.
Get out of there.
You know, that's all. Anyway.
This is a life lesson.
Thank you. That's a
somebody
PSA.
Somebody out there is going to be thanking us one
PSA
day.
PSA from Julia Kelly.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
And don't be on your damn phone in a parking structure that is not well lit.
Jeez. Ladies.
Ladies.
All right.
Be on
Thank
God.
You. There it was. The more you know. That's
Thank
it.
You, Stephen Lemieux.
No, it's, wait, Julia? Marissa? Marissa.
Is it Marissa or Stephen?
It's Marissa. What's
Marissa
up?
Yeah.
What's up, Marissa Serafini?
Yes. All right, so that's all. So just really quick, so we're here. We're here at episode 13. No, we've arrived. No,
I feel like we're about to start over.
Welcome to the Blacklist,
folks.
Episode 13, the Cypress Agency. No, we were here, and I just want to get, you know, just around the room. Let's get our thoughts on what we've seen so far. What have we learned here? What do we feel about, not the Blacklist, the show, because we're all fans, but where do we think they're going to go here in this last?
Are you asking for Uber predictions at this point?
No, well, I'm just asking, I'm just going to get a sense of, like, sort of where we are, and yeah, kind of like where we are. Do you feel satisfied with where we did this in episode 11, but we're going to do it again. Are we satisfied with where we are and what we've learned through this season about characters and everyone else? And do you feel like you know more than you've known before? And second part of the question, you should write this down. Second part of the question is, where do we think this thing will end for season one? Like, how much resolution do you think we will have? And I'm just curious. You take your time.
I am satisfied, if that is the question,
yes,
with where we are now. I'm very happy with where we are now. I like very much that this episode, the last two episodes seem to me very very clear turning points we've gotten thus far, and now we're making a turn. We're turning away from Tom and Lizzie. We're turning away from the idea of them adopting a kid, which I think was ludicrous and stupid, and so I think we're moving away from that. We're doing that by establishing that Lizzie can do more good at working on the Blacklist. We've also, though, I think that my favorite part about where we're at so far is that we've established these levels. We've established that we're going after the Blacklist, but none of the Blacklisters are big. They're all big-ish in the terrible things they do,
sure,
but they're not the actual movers and shakers.
Yeah.
They're the functionaries.
Yep.
And so I love that we're really establishing that on this level, Fitch and Red and Diane used to operate.
Yeah.
On this level down here, RIP, on this level down here, that's where the FBI operates and the Blacklisters operate. This is two different strata. And when Red deigns to come down to this lower strata, he does it. Goddamn, how can you guys not figure this out? Okay, look at the families for the DNA, okay? Seriously. Jesus, you guys.
Yeah.
So, like, and that's every episode, right? He's like, Lizzie comes to Red. I don't know what to do next. He's like, are you serious? God, here, do this. I'm busy dealing with this upper strata where more important things are happening. And so I'm really interested to see how the upper strata, which I think is ultimately the most important, obviously, the movers and the shakers who would utilize the skills of these Blacklisters that are getting knocked off. I'm very excited to see where this goes. And my hope at the end of the season, we have really found out what Fitch's overarching motivation is, even if it's just to keep the proverbial shit in the horse and keep making money for the corporate bosses, if that's the deal. But I'm really curious about that.
All right. Carolee?
I have been very satisfied by mostly the character development, because that's something that's very important to me in committing to a show, 22 hours of a show at that, that mm-hmm. I really need to be invested in the characters and our biggest thing that we had in the beginning was like, who's this wrestler guy? Mm-hmm. You know, like, do something. Don't jump out of your car and point your gun and shoot.
Right.
Who is this Malik girl? What the heck is she doing there?
Yep.
I'm liking that a lot. I'm liking, like I said, the character development. I am enjoying the growth of Lizzie and Red's relationship. It's becoming more on a personal level, which I think will become extremely key.
Right.
And I am satisfied that they are tying up some of the loose ends that they threw out in the very, very, very beginning. I'm talking like the pilot episode. I feel like the pilot episode and the second episode, there was just all these different possibilities thrown out at us, from everything from the baby to is he your father, things like that. But I think they're recognizing that, and they've tied up a lot of those loose ends and really focusing on what the overarching story is going to be.
Okay.
How about you, Joe? Are you satisfied?
I am. I'm very satisfied. I feel, you know, somewhat vindicated philosophically, because at the beginning of the show, you know, we talked a lot about, as you said, we were just doing a lot of, like, you know, episode by episode one, we love the pilot, this is great. By episode two and three, we're like, whoa, this show, we love it, but what about this? And what about this guy? And this guy only does this. And again, you know, I was saying, like, you know, it's a really tough thing to do, to A, in a pilot, to introduce the main characters, the premise, all this information has to be delivered in this 1 hour pilot, which is this kind of sales tool, if you will, that they use to get the show picked up. They did that a long time ago, and then now they have to go and make another 21 episodes of television. And I think that we oftentimes, as viewers and even as people who cover this stuff, forget that. Like in this world of Twitter and instant gratification, the internet and comment sections, we forget, like, we recap shows. It's our job to sort of recap these shows. By episode 2 and 3, we're like, what the? What about this guy? And what about that? And it's like, you know, give it some time to breathe and let them see if they develop these characters. And you know what? They did. We got a little insight into all the characters that we want, except for Harold. But we're going to get them. Sure, we'll
get there.
You know? We've got all the kind of weird loose end stuff that maybe lingered from the pilot and lingered from other places. We kind of they neatly tidied up in the old Angelo Garrick sort of house cleaning episode. I felt like that was part 1 and 2. They kind of killed the people who were kind of needed to be killed and cleaned up all the house and kind of rebooted the show a little in a weird way. I think that was kind of very clever and very well done. And I think now we're in a very nice place where we know what's going on. We're going to get our weekly procedural. We're going to get all of our mystery. We can follow, uncover the mystery of Red. We're going to get our soap opera with Lizzie and Tom and as I predict, Wrestler. And, you know, I think we're in a great, great place. And I'm really excited about what's possible on network TV, specifically NBC. This is a plug for NBC, but NBC's been in trouble. You know, with our beloved NBC of ER fame and others and West Wing fame. Like, you know, I think that I'm really happy with what this is. A very solid drama that they've got here. And I feel like I'm very happy with it. And same with Hannibal, which we also cover, is also NBC. But, yeah, so I'm very happy with the show and I'm very happy with where the characters are. And I'm very excited about where this thing's going to go. I do think by the end, I think we'll have the writers smart enough to give us pretty much all the answers we want in a cliffhanging way. Like, you know, I think we'll find out what Red's thing is. We'll find out about the family. We'll find out about all these different things. And then we'll reset for what's going to happen in season 2 as we, you know, do more. But, I feel like I'm in really, really good hands with John Blomkamp, even though I can never say his name, and Joe Carnahan. And, I'm happy. And Spader.
So yes. Good.
There. That's that.
Done.
The end. No, it's okay. That's all I got. That being said, let's get into our immediate predictions for not next week, but because we're off.
Yes.
We're going to be off here
now,
for a couple weeks.
You're After Buzz TV predictions.
So enjoy the Winter Olympics. I know Joe will be riveted watching every ice dancing. Every bit of ice dancing.
How many ways can you go down a mountain? That should be the subtitle of the Winter Olympics.
There's some ice. There's an Iditarod. There's an ice dancing.
Yeah, there's ice dancing. It's very exciting.
The biathlon.
What's the broomy one?
Curling.
Or the broomy one.
or AKA Canada Shines Now.
Right. There's the one where there's one where they go on the skis and they shoot the gun.
The Nordic people do well.
The bathlon.
Yeah.
Bobsledding. Guys, that's fun.
That's right. Yeah, that's like I said, falling downhill. We do it a bunch of different ways.
You
can ski downhill. You can snowboard downhill. You can strap yourself to this insane thing and go downhill.
So maybe we'll win, and you know, so the Olympics, watch that. But we'll be back in February.
I think the 24th.
Yeah, towards the end
back?
Of February, with a bunch of new Blacklist episodes, and we're very excited about that. But in the meantime, what Julia Kearley, what do you think we can expect?
I want to go back a little bit to something I think is going to be extremely key in all things the Blacklist, and that is the Alchemist episode and who's on that list, who is presumed dead, but who actually is still part of this world. And I think one of the people on that list, are you ready for this? Uh-oh. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
It's going to be Lizzie's real dad.
You don't think she's the dad? Red is not the dad, you don't think?
You're still on that, Joe?
I'm out.
You're not on that.
Red. I'm out!
Red is the dad thing, still.
I still think Red's the dad.
I think the dad's coming back. I think the dad has to come back, and he's going to be he's going to bridge the gap between the relationship of Red and Lizzie.
Did his dad play Hawkeye Pierce on TV's MASH? Did her dad?
You think Fitch might be... No.
Fitch is Lizzie's dad.
I'm asking.
Is that your prediction?
I'm asking. No, I asked the question. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know.
All right,
I guess
Joe,
we'll find out.
What do
you got? I think we're going to have Harold. I think there's going to be an episode pretty soon about Harold. I think because I got to say that I need Harold to do something.
He's got... He's got some acting chops. Waiting to burst out. He's got so many chops.
It's killing me. I'm like...
Like, bust them out.
I cannot tell you how many times I have yelled, damn it, Nairobi, at the screen watching this show. It must be 40 times.
He got really mad this episode.
He did.
Oh, yeah.
I can't do his voice. But I think that I want Harold to do something. I cannot imagine I'm the only one. So my prediction is that Harold is going to do something that's going to be extreme, and it's going to somehow or another involve him saying, damn it, Nairobi.
I also predict there's going to be a lot more neck stabbing.
I'm sorry. I love Jill's prediction. My prediction, Harold's going to do something.
Some goddamn thing.
For the love of God.
Some goddamn thing.
Harold's
going to
do something.
Anything. Okay. I don't care what.
I agree. One thing we didn't mention is, which is a very key thing, which we may get, blasted for, Malik gave the hard drive, the hard to print out of the flash drive. He saw the information. Oh, never mind. Never mind. I'm being dumb. Forget it. It was Diane. Forget it. Never mind.
Are we good now?
Oh, we're good. I'm sorry.
I worked it out
in my head.
Episode 13, The Blacklist. Welcome, everybody.
All right. We're starting.
I do have a quick question.
Yes, go.
What is it that Red passed to Mr. Kaplan? Was that just money?
Who knows?
Is that something? We should have talked about?
I think it was the gun, wasn't it?
I don't know.
No. Okay, never mind.
I don't know.
I predict
know. Predictions, that. Joe Braswell.
No, it's good. No, I do predict. I agree with you. I think Harold, we're going to see more of Harold. Harold's got some stuff to do in February. We're rooting for Harold because he's a fine actor.
Indeed.
That's it. Julia Carely, where can we find you?
Find me on Twitter. My name, Julia Carely, JULIACEARLEY. Also on Instagram. And then with these fools here at AfterBuzz.
What's up, fools?
What's up,
What do? We do The Blacklist. We do The Following. We do True Detective and coming up, Hannibal.
And we have Mesklin.
No,
we don't do that at all.
That's going to be
NBC. No, because we were doing the thing.
Okay, go. All right, NBC promo department is going to get that, and that's going to be our
takeaway.
Go ahead.
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Flippo. You can find me on my website is josephsanflippo.com. And again, here with these fools.
Yes, fool. And you can find me on Instagram at Joe Braswell. I'm totally starting to drop some Instagram photos now.
I'm
getting active on Instagram.
Impressed.
I'm so excited about it. I put a video up. I put some other stuff up.
Oh,
so if anyone cares, follow me on Instagram at Joe Braswell. I'll follow you back and do a bunch of stuff. And on Twitter, at Joe K. Braswell. And for all you don't follow me, follow me there and find me there. And all here with the rest of these fools and a bunch of other shows. And I work a bunch of other places too, but no one cares. We are out of here. We'll see you back after the Olympics in February. And we'll keep in contact via Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
And we love you all.
Woo-hoo. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.
Thank you for watching AfterBuzz TV on YouTube. For more of your favorite after shows and interviews, subscribe to our channel here and be sure to share your opinion on the episode in the comment section below here. We'd love to see what you guys are buzzing about. Thanks again. Buzz you later.